Well, it's one of our favorite segments of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. It's the Alumni Spotlight, and we are pleased to have with us now for the first time in this segment, although he's been on the show before, our good friend Reggie Rucker. Reggie, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Vic. Good to be here, and nice to see a new setup here.
Yeah, you like the studio? You like the digs?
Yeah. Looks like you got some money.
I don't know about that, but they did set us up very nicely, and we are blessed and pleased to be right here, literally smack dab in the middle of the football headquarters in Berea. Reggie, want to start with, because we are so close to draft time, and this, as these days now we move closer and closer to it, just this process of coming into the league as a player for you. 1970, you entered the league as a free agent with the Dallas Cowboys. But if you could go back in your memory and just talk about what it was like from Boston University to the Cowboys, that from the time, I guess, you played your last game and until you were being courted, and I'm sure you were hoping to be drafted, but you ended up coming in as an undrafted free agent.
Yes, very, very fond, and I would say vivid memories of those days, getting ready to graduate. And, of course, I hadn't have any money. And as most college seniors, probably find themselves in a situation where they can't wait to get out into the world to take advantage of this education now. And,
right.
And of course, with me, I had played all of these sports at Boston University, and many people thought that I was going to play Major League Baseball, and that was the word going around in the Boston papers. And but at the same time, the people in New England that were being considered for the NFL draft, of course, Calvin Hill,
right,
and then Reggie Rucker, and I mean, they were telling me I was going in very high in the draft, and I was excited. And well, the draft came, and I didn't get drafted at all.
Who was saying this was like the media? Where were you hearing about you being touted as a?
Well, I was getting feelers and letters, and scouts were coming to the campus, and the media was talking about the players, and I guess they were talking to scouts and trying to determine who were the players in New England who were going to be involved in the draft and how high would they go.
Right.
And the consensus opinion was that Calvin Hill was going to go in the first round.
Coming out of the Ivy League.
Yes, which was unheard of at that time still.
Yeah.
And with all of the things that I had been involved with at Boston University and the things that I've done on the football field, you would have thought that I would be, fourth, fifth, whatever.
Yeah, makes sense.
Well, I wasn't drafted at all.
So you were shut right off of the bat. How are you dealing? Because then it wasn't like coverage on TV or you could watch in real time what was going on. You basically waited around your dorm or your apartment
phone to ring. And I didn't have a phone, so they would have to contact the athletic office and get a message to me because I was living off campus at that time.
Okay.
And the draft was held over a couple of days.
Yes.
And I just kept waiting and waiting and waiting, and I never heard from anyone. And it was very agonizing because this is what I thought I was going to do, although I kept telling myself that, okay, so what? You can play baseball. You've already been drafted. You're ready to go. You have contracts. You can go and play.
Who was the team? What was the Major League Baseball team that was?
Washington Senators. At that time, they were territorial rights.
Right.
And the Washington Senators owned mine because I was from D.C.
That's your hometown.
And, I guess that was my way of getting out of that guilty feeling.
Yeah, or rationalizing
that fear.
It a little.
Yeah, rationalizing why I hadn't been drafted. I was saying things like, oh, they knew I was going to play baseball.
Yeah, there you go. And they stayed away from you. And then, okay, so you wait around, never get the call. And then when and how do the Cowboys reach out to you?
I was informed by the Cowboys that Gil Brandt, was coming to see me about signing with the Dallas Cowboys.
He was their director of player personnel at the time and architect of those great teams
the
of the 70s. Yeah.
The guru of that time.
Still the guru working for NFL.com
but
now.
At that time, he was one of the first to start looking at athletes.
Okay.
Because the Cowboys' philosophy, they felt that once they got into their free agents, into that they were looking for athletes, and they felt like if you were a good athlete and you played some football, they could teach you. Cornell Green had been one of the first players that they found on a basketball court and became an all a Pro Bowl cornerback.
Bob Hayes, a sprinter, and
although Bob came in the first round, but
yeah.
They contacted me, and Gil Brandt showed up and gave me this line. Tom Landry sent me here all the way from Dallas to make sure that we signed you. We have a we have lots of things planned for you. You know, you can be this and that. I'm thinking, why don't you guys draft me?
If you love me that much.
Why don't you guys draft me?
Yeah.
So the thing that I thought about at that time, because I was getting some advice from some friends, and they were saying, why would you sign with those people? They, you know, they'd been in two NFC championships. They were power packed. They had everything. That was the America's team. They were just beginning the mantra of America's team.
Right.
And my feeling was that I still said, you know, I'm going to play baseball, and if I have a shot, I want to go to a team where I think I can get more of an opportunity to show, because they know what they have, and I don't think that they're going to be playing their stars a lot, and I think you have a better chance to shine because they're probably going to give you more of an opportunity.
Sure, sure.
And so I decided to sign with the Dallas Cowboys for the whopping sum of $250 bonus.
Oh, man. $250 bonus.
And for a guy who had just recently split a hot dog for Thanksgiving with my wife and family, that seemed like a lot of money at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a true story.
All right. No, that's great perspective. Reggie Rucker joining us on our alumni spotlight segment. Of course, former Browns wide receiver. Now, excuse me, you go from Dallas to a brief stint with the New York Giants, then the New England Patriots, 71-74, and you end up with the Browns in 75, and you're here through 81, through the balance of your career, most of your career spent with Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Your best memory, what stands out in your mind as the best memory of your time as a Brown?
Collectively, the cardiac kids year. I mean, it would be hard to put it into a one-game perspective, but that entire season was such a magical time, and the experience of a lifetime, and just some of the most incredible football plays occurring just every week. I mean, week after week after week, coming from behind and winning games, and being a part of that was really one of the highlights of my career.
It just seemed, Reggie, that so much clicked. Again, Brian Sipe as your quarterback, and the offensive line performing as it did, and all you guys, it was the right fit for everybody, so it seemed. And Sam Ratigliano was coach, and all of you had your roles, had your part, but it seemed as if you were destined and belonged together.
Yeah, yeah. First of all, Vic, you have to remember, Sam and I knew each other, and he had coached me in New England. And when I went from Dallas through New York to New England, it was actually a trade and New York I was only there for a couple of weeks. And then I went right to New England. And so Sam was responsible for getting me back on the right track in New England, because I'd had a major surgery in Dallas on both of my feet.
Okay.
In which later on, when I had seen Tom Landry at a sports award dinner, when I was being honored in D.C. and he was being honored, you know, he told the crowd after I had accepted my award, he said, based upon the information that we had and the surgeries that he had, we didn't think he would play again. And he was trying to tell the audience, how could you have let the guy go? And he just sat up here. I came up here and received this award from the Washington Touchdown Club. And he said, and then he also said it again in an article, and I saw that, and he was true, because I had major surgery on both of my feet.
Did you doubt and wonder if your career was going to continue?
Yes, because I was back out. I had a surgery that would typically require more than a year to recover from, and I had the surgery after our Dallas Super Bowl against the Colts in late January, and I was back in training camp in July.
So you end up, and again, through Sam, end up being here, being with the Browns. And as that team was constructed, because you had such a brilliant passer in Brian Sipe, and his feel for, I think, what each of you could do on that team, yeah. right, was kind of yeah. like the key. And in your, how would you describe for as you recall it, what it was that he would look to you for, and yeah. and how the game plans were constructed with you?
Yeah, I was a big play guy.
Yeah.
I was a guy that he saved for the play. To win a game,
the money down.
Exactly, and obviously during that time the run was featured.
Yeah,
and so you were running the football 35, 40 times, and
you had the Pruitts, right? You had
right,
Greg
yeah.
and Mike.
I mean,
yeah,
you got Mike Pruitt, you got Greg Pruitt, Cleo Miller. I mean, and then we drafted Charles White, Heisman Trophy winning running back.
Right.
So we had size, speed, we had all of this stuff in the backfield, but we still had Sipe, Rucker, Logan, Newsom. I mean,
yeah.
And then we had Calvin Hill coming out of the backfield, catching 50-some
right.
Passes and five touchdowns. I mean, you had guys everywhere. So the point was, because I had known Sam and we were a perfect fit, the thing that he conveyed to me and I was able to convey to the other members of the team because they didn't know him was that, okay, we have a chance to do something very good here. But if you still want to, you know, make all pro and do this and do that, you might be able to do that if we throw you the ball and, you know, you take care of Reggie, but we don't do anything as a team. He said, so I'm asking you at this point, will you support what I'm trying to do? And so I said yes to him. I said, okay, we'll do it that way. And, you know, you won't ever have a problem with me, and I will make sure that, you know, we subvert our egos so that we can get your vision accomplished. And that's basically how he came in, and yeah. that's the message I took to the players. And so I had to – he put me on the spot, so I had to conduct myself in a certain way.
Right.
Because, you know, when I had come to the Browns from New England – I had led the league and been really a rising star and playing with Jim Plunkett.
Right.
So I was with a big, strong arm quarterback that could do anything out there I wanted to do. And then when I came to Cleveland, they didn't have a quarterback. In my first year here in 1975, I led the AFC in receptions, and four different quarterbacks threw to me.
That makes a statement.
And so I was really upset at times because – you know, I said, look, you know, I want to run the deep out. I want to do – I couldn't do that.
Hmm. Yes.
I couldn't do it at that time
yeah.
because of what we were creating.
And the structure of the
yeah.
team.
But if you take a look at the offensive line, four of those guys were there then.
Yeah.
They were all just beginning.
Right.
DeLeon, Deacon,
yep.
Jackson – and then of course we added Cody Risen and
sure.
Joe D a little bit later, but many of those guys were beginning to form the basis of that offensive line.
Today you're part of it's the Peacemakers Alliance. You're president of that organization. Tell us what that's all about.
The Peacemakers Alliance is an initiative of the city of Cleveland, actually the U.S. Attorney's Office, and funded by Cleveland Foundation to work with youth who are at risk and who are responsible for or may be victims of the violence that's in this community, which adversely affects youth, families, and neighborhoods and the city of Cleveland. And about 4 years ago, a United States Attorney and the Attorney General's office all decided that, you know, we've got to do something about youth violence, and particularly violence associated with the use of a gun, and it's causing havoc in the cities across America. Cleveland was one of the cities in which the feds funded a program called STANCE, which is Stand Together Against Neighborhood Crime Every Day. And so on that STANCE committee, you have all of the players in the city of Cleveland, the chief of police, the U.S. attorney, the mayor, and all those people. And as president of the Peacemakers Alliance, I sit on that STANCE committee as well.
Okay.
And we chart really the direction and the solutions for gangs and gang violence and how we go about it. And, of course, I got to that position by leading the AmeriCAN program both nationally with Jim Brown mm-hmm. and also AmeriCAN Cleveland here, in which we teach the responsibility of self-determination through life management skills.
That's heavyweight stuff, and it's God bless you for doing it, because I'm sure the community is better to have this and have programs like this and have people like you who care. So
thank you. If I might say one thing,
yeah,
about that.
Please.
We were in one of those stance meetings, and you have all these people sitting around. It's a big power table, and this lady told me later on who asked to meet with me because she's interested in helping us raise money. She said, I come to this meeting, and then here's this guy, Reggie Rucker, and all I know about him, he's this football player and all this and stuff. And I said, now, what does he know about this? This is a very, very serious subject matter here. We're talking about gang violence in youth. And so. And she said, and then you started to talk, and she said, you have this wealth of experience and this knowledge. I said, well, for about 4 or 5 years, I traveled this country with Jim Brown. I spoke to presidents, senators, congressmen, state legislators all across the country about this issue. So I was trained very well, learned to listen, I learned the business from him, and then when I was ready, and when he thought I was ready, then he turned most of the operations over to me. Hmm. And so, I don't know if you came to the luncheon in December.
I did, I was there,
okay.
Yes.
That was a very important day, because what we were doing at that luncheon was really introducing the Peacemakers Alliance to the city, and we
right.
are embarking on a campaign to do that more effectively. In fact, I just had breakfast this morning with Terry Egger, who is the president and publisher of The Plain Deal, and Brenda Adams Smith, who is the chief editor, because they believe in what we're doing, but they recognize we have to make this community more aware of what this organization does, the problems that are in our communities, and how we must go about it as a community to resolve those issues. We can't do it alone. And we just saw what happened in Chardon.
Sure.
Now that's not related to the kind of stuff that we do, but it still is violence with a handgun.
Yep, violence is violence. Yes, no. This is, and I hope even this time here helps raise that awareness. And
if you can hear us, you can help us.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Reggie, for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
He is Reggie Rucker, former standout wide receiver for the Browns, our alumni spotlight subject of this week. More coming up on Cleveland Browns Daily. It's driven by Liberty Ford, brought to you by Madden NFL 12. EA Sports, it's in the game.